Shotgun. Marino throws deep downfield. It is caught by Fryer. Yes! Touchdown! Touchdown, Dolphins!
With in-depth analysis on the Miami Dolphins.
The Rangers call! That's on 4th and 5!
Live from the DolphinsTalk.com studios.
In my opinion, the greatest fans in the NFL, Miami Dolphin fans.
DolphinsTalk.com daily.
All right, Miami! Coming to you live from the DolphinsTalk.com studios, you are listening to DolphinsTalk.com Daily, the most listened to daily Miami Dolphins podcast on the internet. I am your host, Mike, on this Friday, May the 18th, and we got a great show for you today. Later on in the podcast, I will be joined by fellow DolphinsTalk.com blogger and podcaster Tom Earnessy to talk a little bit about the new rule to the kickoffs here that is about to be voted on in the NFL and how that might affect the Miami Dolphins, as well as a long and healthy debate on quarterback Ryan Tannehill. As I've said on this podcast before, we really haven't talked much about Ryan Tannehill, you know, the past year or so, probably since he got hurt, because there really hasn't been much to talk about with Ryan. As you know, he didn't play at the end of the 2016 season. He got hurt so early at the start of the 2017 season. I think it was August 3rd, off the top of my head. And there was really no reason to talk about him much after that, because, you know, he was a non-factor. He was out for the year. We really haven't talked about him a lot. So we're going to talk about him a little bit today, and we'll talk about him a little bit more between now and the start of the season, obviously, as a starting quarterback at Dolphins. Now, look, I'm not one of these guys who are going to spend, you know, day after day. If you listen to some of the local radio shows in South Florida on the various sports stations, they will, you know, beat this horse to death regarding Ryan Tannehill. They'll talk about him 4 hours a day every day and just, you know, go over minutiae over minutiae. And look, that's not me. If you want that, you can just tune in to some of the many South Florida radio stations this time of year, because they're not talking about the Heat. They're not talking about the Marlins. And there's really not much to talk about in South Florida on the radio. So they just talk Ryan Tannehill 24-7, blah, 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 rehashing old games, rehashing old plays. That ain't me. I can't take it. I find it totally boring. I find it overkill. I find it, that ain't me. You're going to have to find another show if you want to hear that stuff. But we are going to talk about him a little bit more as we get closer to, you know, training camp and stuff. And with the OTAs starting next week in Miami and the report that it looks like Ryan Tannehill's ready to go with little to no limitations starting next week when OTAs start, I wanted to have time on and talk about Tannehill, what this means, his health from all the reports now, and just, you know, a big picture outlook for the 2018 season when it comes to Ryan Tannehill. You know, and this will be a show where we spend a lot of time talking about him. Like I said, we're not going to do this every day, because, and we're not going to do this every week, because it's too much. And like I said, for those of you who want to hear that stuff, if for most of you who live in South Florida, you got 560, you got 790, you got 640, you got numerous radio stations where you can get Ryan Tannehill 24/7. And you also, you know, it's just, like I said, it becomes just overkill and boring. It's too much. It's too much. He's been in the league since 2012. There's really not that much to talk about, and we sort of know who he is at this point. It's more of just some of the, how are they going to prepare him for this year, and what should we expect with a new cast of characters around him in some key spots. So me and Tom will talk about that later on in the podcast. Before I get to that, though, one thing I want to talk about. Adam Gase, earlier this week, was on Pro Football Talk. They have a radio show. It's not just a website, folks. Pro Football Talk Live. And one thing he was speaking about was Danny Amendola. And Adam Gase, you know, when a head coach talks about one of his guys, you know, for the most part, 9 times out of 10 or 99% of the time, they're not going to say anything bad about one of the guys on his team. Especially someone who they just signed, because they just signed him for a reason. They must like him and they want him on the team. But Adam Gase was gushing, absolutely gushing about new wide receiver Danny Amendola. Let me see if I can find some of the quotes. Anytime you can get a guy who can not only produce for you, but can be a great example for other guys in the locker room, he's making other guys better. He makes 24 other offensive guys better if they watch him work. That was one of the quotes. It's one of those values I don't think you can put a price on. He's been great in our locker room. I think the guys watch him work on the field and in the weight room, and they understand why he's played as long as he has, why he's had success in big situations. So, I mean, and it went on and on. It was pretty much an open love letter from Adam Gase to Danny Amendola. And look, Amendola, I agree. I mean, when Miami signed him, I think there was a segment in the media and such that were like, he's old. He's not playing with Tom Brady no more. I don't know what you're going to get from him. And he's always hurt as well, which I get. All that's true. All of it's true. But yes, he is going to be someone in that wide receiver room, especially, who the younger wide receivers can look up to, who the younger wide receivers you hopefully take notes from, take a page from. Like, look, this guy has been in the league for many years. He's won some Super Bowls, and we need to do what he's doing to have a long and successful NFL, career. With that said, though, mainly you hope the guy who takes the most from him would be Devontae Parker. Clearly, as we've spoken about on this podcast, and as many of our guests have said in this podcast, just as recently as Greg Likens and Chris Fisher from NBC6 and the NFL on CBS, as they've said, Devontae Parker, it's like everybody's sick of hearing about it. It's time to just perform. And hopefully someone like Parker can learn a little from Amendola. It's almost like Frank Gore being signed. You hope he rubs off on guys like Kenyon Drake and the rookie out of Arizona State, Kalen Ballage. If Miami signing him, if all he does is help turn around Devontae Parker, I don't care if he catches one pass all year. Honestly, I don't. If he can sort of be that, you know, mentoring type for Devontae Parker and get his head screwed on straight to where he performs like we think he can perform, then the signing is worth its weight in gold. And I think what Adam Gase said there on Pro Football Talk Live is sort of, if you read between the lines, that's sort of what he's hinting at, is like he's hoping other guys on offense, and you know who the guys who need to get their head on straight. You know the guys who need to be professionals. He's not talking about someone like Kenny Stills, okay? He ain't talking about Kenny Stills. He's talking about the guys like Parker and some of the other guys who need to mature, who need to be more consistent, and who need to be better professionals. So there's that. And Adam Gase, just an open love letter. But when it comes to having a veteran in there for leadership and all that, you know, in theory, on paper, it sounds great. This is what you want, blah, blah, blah. In reality, it does come down to the younger player. And does the younger player have his head screwed on straight? And is he open to listening and learning? Some guys are, and some guys will turn around and they will take the advice of the vet who's now in there and sort of, you know, follow them around, learn what it takes, and change their attitude to become that better player. But, you know, we've seen in this league, there's a lot of times the young player is not open and they think they know everything. And I don't care about no Amendola. I'm not listening. You get that as well. So Amendola can only do so much through that quote-unquote leadership, mentorship. That only goes so far because it's a 50-50 split. The younger player has to be open to it. And if the younger player is not open to it, you know, Amendola could be talking to a wall because you can only lead by example and sort of be that leader mentor. But you got to have someone who's willing to work as well and change their ways. So hopefully Amendola, you know, you have guys in that wide receiver room for Miami like Albert Wilson, who I think is a great player, but he's still young, obviously. Devontae Parker. You have Leonte Carew, who's probably in the same boat as DeVante Parker. This is probably his last chance in Miami, if he even makes the roster, which is probably a long shot, to be honest. Guys like that who could learn a thing or two from Danny Amendola and hopefully turn around their NFL careers. Will it happen? We don't know. Are they open-minded enough to change their ways and maybe get their head screwed on straight to be better performers on the field, to put in the extra work, put in the extra time, and do what it takes? We don't know. We can only hope. And hopefully that's the case, because Amendola, I think he's got probably 1 or 2 years left in the tank where he can give you something on the field. I know he's got one for sure. Yeah, anything more than one, he might have two. He might. We'll see. So I think he will help Miami on the field for sure. But if his most value is, I think, straightening out that wide receiver room, who sort of get the most out of some of these young guys who Miami invested a lot of picks on and a lot of high picks. DeVante Parker, I believe, was picked 15th overall or somewhere around there. Very high in round one. And you got someone like Leonte Carew, who Miami traded so many picks for, to select him in round three. You want to get a return on your investment. And Amendola, hopefully he can be that leader. Hopefully he can be that guy to sort of, you know, straighten out that wide receiver room and maximize it. Because talent alone, that wide receiver room is still, even without Jarvis Landry, one of the best wide receiving groups in the NFL. When you got Stills, Wilson, Parker, Amendola, just from a physical trait standpoint, from physical ability standpoint, those guys are as good as it gets. Are as good as it gets when they're on their game. So hopefully they're on their game. And I haven't even mentioned guys like Jakeem Grant and Isaiah Ford and stuff. So, I mean, they are deep at wide receiver and deep with a lot of talent. So if everybody's on the same page and if everybody brings their A game every week, that group should be hell for opponents. They should be hell for opponents and just cause havoc for teams Miami is playing. But we haven't seen it with Parker. We haven't seen it with Leonte Carew yet. So hopefully Amendola can help shape that wide receiver room and improve it. Speaking of wide receivers in Miami Dolphins, or at least talking about a former Miami Dolphins wide receiver, it was announced that the Cleveland Browns will be on Hard Knocks, HBO. I believe it starts August 7th, which means we will see a heavy dose of Jarvis Landry on HBO Hard Knocks. I can tell you right now, when HBO and the NFL sat down and they came to the conclusion that the Cleveland Browns will be on Hard Knocks, they go, well, what are going to be the storylines? Well, obviously, number one will be Baker Mayfield, beyond a shadow of a doubt. He will get all the attention. It's going to be Mayfield. But after him, Jarvis Landry is the next guy. Because number one, he is a colorful personality. He's never shy and never short for a good quote. So the cameras will be plastered on Jarvis Landry, especially since A, he's in a new home. B, he got a big contract. And look, it's going to be a lot of Jarvis Landry on Hard Knocks. Will he take shots at Miami? Will he take shots at the Miami Dolphins organization? We'll see. I don't know. I think he might take one or two, but we will see. He might not, though, because since he's left, he really hasn't. He sort of said the company line of, you know, this is a business. I had to do what's best for me and my family, blah, blah, blah. He might just say that. Could he take a subtle passing shot at the Dolphins? Possible. We here on this website last year dealt with Jarvis Landry and his people for an event. We helped co-promote and co-sponsor his youth camp down in Miami. And our interactions with Jarvis and all the people around him and such were nothing but top-notch, first class all the way, all great people involved. So I don't think he would take a shot at the Dolphins, because just from our interactions with Landry here at DolphinsTalk.com, we never got that vibe. He was super cool to us, super nice to us. All the people around him were super cool, super professional. And we didn't get the vibe that he's that type of guy. And look, some things were said, obviously, in the media through his agent during that time in, you know, February, March, when he was looking for his payday. But that's sort of the game you play during that time of year. So I'm not going to hold that against him, really, because a lot of players are involved in that. But since he signed with the Browns, he really hasn't taken any shots in Miami. And before he became, You know, and before that was a thing where he was able to shop himself in a trade to other teams. He really didn't take shots at Miami in the press, so I don't think he would. But Hard Knocks, look, I love that show. Look, it is what it is, that show. You're not going to get total behind the scenes and stuff because the team that's involved here is the Browns and the league. They're not going to allow certain things to be shown, but it's a good look and a good insight into, you know, how the front office handles cut down days and stuff and what it's like to be on the field for a practice. For those of you who haven't been lucky enough to be on the sideline for a practice in the NFL during, you know, that summer months training camp, it does give you that good insight. It does. How the assistant coaches interact with the players, how they push certain guys and stuff. So I love this show. I've always loved the show. I always like it when they show new teams. Obviously, the Browns haven't been on before, so that's going to be good. And this should be interesting because, look, the Browns last year were 0-16, and they are pretty bad. And they've been pretty bad for many years. But this ought to be a fun one, and I think Jarvis Landry will be featured a lot, and I'm sure the Miami Dolphins will come up a time or two. But we'll see how that's handled with Jarvis on Hard Knocks. So we're going to take a quick break here, and after the break, I will be joined by Tom Ernesty as we talk a little Ryan Tannehill and the upcoming possible rule changes to the kickoff rule and how that might affect the Miami Dolphins and just league-wide how that will affect the game of NFL football.
Simbad Sports is the number one sports memorabilia company in South Florida and the number one place to go get your Miami Dolphins memorabilia. Simbad Sports has the likes of Rashad Jones, Cam Wake, Kiko Alonso, and Frank Gore in for autograph signings within the past year alone. So when in South Florida area, visit Simbad Sports at 1976 South University Drive, Davie, Florida. Tell them DolphinsTalk.com sent you.
On the DolphinsTalk.com hotline is Tom Ernesty from right here at DolphinsTalk.com. Tom, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good. How are you, Mike?
Doing good, doing good. So I want to talk a little bit here about Ryan Tannehill because, let's be honest, when you talk about the Miami Dolphins, it's always about Ryan. Polarizing figure in the history of the Miami Dolphins. Would you agree with that?
I would agree to it because there's either the Tannehill lovers and the Tannehill haters, and there's no in between. It's no, you know, I like him, but it's no, I think Tannehill is the guy, or Tannehill sucks. We need to move on to something.
Exactly.
I don't really think there's a lot of in between.
No, there's not a lot. I actually think I'm one of the few people who are in the in between, as well as you, actually. But there's really not a lot. That's probably a population of maybe like less than 10. It is very, you're one side or the other. And the one thing I want to talk about, which I sort of touched on this week on the podcast at the start of the week, was there was a report in the Miami Herald from Armando Salguero, who said that it looks like from all signs and things he's hearing that the Miami Dolphins are going to have no limitations on Ryan Tannehill as he enters the OTAs and training camp, that they're trying to put together a plan on how they're going to use them. But from a health standpoint, it appears, you know, full steam ahead with little to no limitations. And as I said, I think that's a huge mistake. I think they should bring him along as slowly as possible. If we learn anything from last year, it's that, you know, training camp and the preseason and OTAs, like, which will start up next week. You know, well, that stuff is nice. It doesn't really mean anything. It's totally meaningless in the big picture, and you have to minimize the risk. And I think here, if Miami's smart, they have to minimize the risk. I've heard some people in the media, some people on the radio, and even some fans, but fans are fans, so I don't put a lot of stock in that, saying, well, he had the surgery now, so full steam ahead. Which I say, no, 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 no. Just because he had the surgery, he's still rehabbing this knee injury. There's that. And plus, anyways, look, a lot of guys have had the surgery. It's a long recovery, and you got to be smart about it. You got to be really smart about it. What are your thoughts on this, Tom, and just how Miami should use Tannehill here in May, June, into the lead up to training camp and the preseason?
I think at this point with Tannehill, even though he's been given the go-ahead to go full steam ahead, I agree that he should not be out there running bootlegs and quarterback draws or anything else like that camp. At this point, all he should be doing is taking some five-step drops, seven-step drops, and throwing to his receivers. He's got a lot of new guys in the locker room. He wants to get some chemistry. It's been reported that he's already been throwing to Danny Amendola, Albert Wilson, and all the other guys outside of the facility. So I believe that it is the smart thing to do is to let him throw, but don't let him do the, read options and things like that. Make sure he's not getting touched. Make sure he's not getting out of the pocket, scrambling like crazy right now. It's not the time. The time right now is just to get some, get some sort of gelling with your new wide receivers and make sure that you're ready to go in July. I'd rather have him go full speed ahead in July than have him go full speed ahead in May.
Yep, absolutely. And there was a thought I had when I was preparing for the show, and that was, smart teams do smart things, and teams that are dumb consistently do things that are dumb. And hopefully the Miami Dolphins here don't be dumb. And hopefully they're smart about this, because like you said, like I said, this is May. This is just OTAs. Training camp's going to be much of the same come late July, first part of August. You want to keep him as safe and as healthy as possible in a controlled environment. And that's what things like OTAs are. That's what practices are, controlled environments. And you want to be smart about it. Yes, he has to sort of gel with his new wide receivers and stuff. We get it. That has to happen. But, to an extent, some of that stuff is a little bit overrated. At the end of the day, this is just football. And yes, he has to gel with them and get on the same page. We get it. But, not at the extent where you put him at risk. And we all know somebody can get hurt at any time on a football field. We saw it last year. He was out there running around. Nobody really touched him. He goes down. We get it. Injuries can happen anywhere. But it's about minimizing the risk. So this is going to be really something to watch here starting next week with their first OTAs. Now, look, with these OTAs, for the most part, it's a lot of conditioning and stuff. And they're on the field some, but especially for the first one of the year, they're not on the field a lot, but they're on the field some. So that's something to watch from. And as you said, it feels like with Tannehill, you almost have to pick a side, which I hate that. I really do hate that. It drives me nuts. It seems like the fan base who, look, once again, take it with a grain of salt, fans, and fans are always going to be fans. If you're not either with him 1,000% and in that group of the diehard Tannehill supporters, the sicko fans who no matter what he does will always find an excuse for him, then you're automatically placed in the other side of someone who does not want him in Miami, and that's unfair. I think there should be at least a larger group in the middle, like someone like you, like someone like me who says, you know what, we like the guy, we root for the guy, we hope for the best with him, we think he's not as bad as the national media shows him to be, but also, he has been here since the year 2012, and it's sort of like now or never for him. Would you agree with that?
I think so. I think the biggest thing right now with Tannehill is that he had 13 games with Adam Gase in 2016. He was 8-5 with 19 touchdowns, 12 interceptions, and 3,000 yards, call it, when we round up 5 yards. He has shown, and he was 7-1 in his last 8 starts under Adam Gase. And the offense, it was not like the offense that we've watched last year with Jay Cutler at the helm. We watched Tannehill put up 20 plus points and a half. We see the offense clicking on all cylinders, 3 touchdown passes in one half. The offense seemed to finally be hitting its stride, and then unfortunately, Calais Campbell ruined our lives. And, you know, again, we don't know where that 16 season would have gone in the playoffs if Tannehill stayed healthy. The team was firing on all cylinders, but you can't dwell on the past. You got to look ahead and understand that this is a huge season for Ryan Tannehill. And the biggest reason is they gave him he took a pay cut, not technically. He restructured his contract for this year, and he's pretty much locked in with this team at least until 2020, at least. That doesn't say that he may not be here in 2019, depending on how this thing goes. If it's the Tannehill that we saw in the last eight games he started with Adam Gase, they have something. If it's the Tannehill from the first four games with Adam Gase, the Dolphins really need to start thinking of moving on. You know, Adam Gase is sold. Everybody is hedging their bets on Ryan Tannehill, and it's got to be a big year for him. He's expecting a big season, even though he hasn't played it down since December of 2016. He's expecting a lot of big things out of himself, and it seems like the team is expecting big things out of him as well.
And it should be, yeah, as it should be.
It should be. You're absolutely right. This is the time that he needs to put up or shut up. Again, I support Tannehill. I believe he's a very good player. He needs to continue to evolve in Adam Gase's system, and it really begins in week one against the Titans. If the Dolphins come out and the offense is just firing on all cylinders and they take care of Tennessee, who is a very good football team, you know, things can really blossom for the Dolphins in 2018 with Tannehill back at the helm. But it's not always on the quarterback's shoulders. It's a quarterback league. We all understand that. If your quarterback stinks, you're not going to win any games. But if your quarterback is average, as Tannehill really falls into that average to average to good, maybe even a very good range, you have to have the help around him. He's not going to do it on his own. He's not a Tom Brady. He's not an Aaron Rodgers. He's not going to do it on his own, but he needs the help. And the help really has to come from the other side of the football. The defense has to get fixed. This is a no-excuse season for Matt Burke. They have to get this rectified as quickly as possible. And if the defense can live up to expectations, the offense pulls their part. As with any other team, it will look good. And the team will play very well, but we will find out. You know, there's a lot that has to happen, and we're just scratching the surface.
Yeah, absolutely, and it all sort of leads back to that age old debate of wins is not a quarterback stat, which I do see that it's not fair to place it all on the quarterback, but to some level it's not, but it kind of is a quarterback stat because the quarterback has such a big influence on whether the team wins or loses that, you know, you can make some excuses. And for Tannehill, since he's been in Miami, we've seen all the excuses. The first so many years, he didn't have any wide receivers, which was fair because it was true. He had no wide receivers year one and two. But that was fair. Then it was, well, he had a poor head coach and no one was out there helping him. Okay, we get that. Then it was the offensive line's fault. We get that. But there does come a point where you got to stop with excuses. And the people out there who are the quote-unquote Tannehill apologists, that no matter what he does, it's always someone else's fault. It's like, well, it's not his fault. It's the offensive line. Well, he's got no wide receivers. Well, it's the offensive coordinator. We get it. But you know what? In the NFL, you're never going to have a perfect situation. You'll never have it.
Right.
So you got to be able to fight through it on some level. And the apologists for him just don't see that. They're like lost in their own world, and it's always somebody else's fault, and they fall in love with stats and this and that, and you gotta look at this play on tape and numbers. See, it's not his fault, which I, once again, it does become overkill at a certain point. And this is year three in the offense with him and Adam Gase. I know he didn't play last year, but you know what, he was in every meeting, he was on all the road trips. This is year three for
him.
He's
even making play calls.
Exactly. He knows this offense like the back of his hand now, so that's not an excuse either. There's talk that they want. Now, here's what something else that I talked about on the podcast at the start of the week, that they want to run that fast-paced, up-tempo offense, blah, blah, blah. To me, this is, once again, another mistake. It's trying to fit a square peg in a round hole. We saw this with Lazor when he was the offensive coordinator. And then obviously with Clyde Christensen and Adam Gase, and now they're going to try it again with Loggins. Look, Tannehill, the best stretch he ever had was the 8 games right before he got hurt. And what were they doing then? It wasn't no fast-paced, up-tempo offense. It goes back to that saying, smart teams do smart things, and teams that aren't so smart always do something dumb. And if you got to go back to what worked before with him. We've tried this with him in the past, the fast-paced, up-tempo offense. It hasn't worked. That's not a knock on him. It just doesn't work. But when you put him in a huddle, call the play, run the ball well, and let him be a guy, that's the type of offense that works with him. We saw it for those 8 games. So why they would try to not stick with that is beyond me. And look, who knows? Sometimes they say things and it's not 100% honest, but I believe this is honest because since the first day he got here, Adam Gase has wanted to run their fast-paced, up-tempo offense, but I'm telling you, it's just not going to work with him, Tannehill. Maybe they will prove me wrong, and I'll be back on here in 6 months and say, you know what, I was dead wrong, but I don't think I will be because we've seen them try it before with him at quarterback. It doesn't work. What are your thoughts on that, Tim?
My 2 cents on that is it didn't work for the most part in that first season with Adam Gase because nobody knew what the hell they were doing. How many blown assignments were there in every single football game? The receivers didn't know where they were going. Tannehill didn't know where he was going most of the time with the football. Adam Gase slowed it down for him, and the offense started picking up steam, and they started putting up points. It was a more methodical approach. And on top of that, the running game started to work when Ajayi was plugged in as the starter. That's the big change that happened to make it successful. I don't mind them going to the fast-paced offense because with Tannehill in the meetings and going and understanding how it's going to work, Jay Cutler ran the system last year, for God's sakes. If Jay Cutler could run the system, granted it wasn't very good with Jay Cutler, but you saw more of an up-tempo, more fast-paced offense at times, not a full-time thing. But they did run a quicker pace offense with Jay Cutler. So I think with Tannehill, it is now a matter of you understand the system. You know what you have to do. Now just go out and do it. You have what they said were the cancerous players are now out of the locker room. Everybody's going to buy into the system. Everyone's going to buy into what Adam Gase is selling. And the offense will come full circle. They have the right people in place on the offensive line. They have the wide receivers. They don't have to sit there and focus on one guy getting the football all the time. They're going to spread the ball. They're going to spread the love. And that's what makes a up-tempo offense work. Instead of focusing on one guy here and that guy there, you're going to be able to spread the ball around, go through progressions, and find the guy that's open instead of force-feeding it to Jarvis Landry, which is what they have done.
Yeah. And look, I hope you're right. I really am. I don't know if I'm there yet because even before we had the head coach, Adam Gase, here, we tried this with him with Lazor when he was the offensive coordinator, and it didn't work then either. So it's not just with Adam Gase. I just don't know if he's that type of quarterback. I don't. And once again, that's not a knock. That's not a knock on him. I just don't know if he's the type of guy who can run that type of fast-paced offense. I think we saw him at his best when, yes, they slowed things down for him, and he might just be that guy where he needs it slowed down for him because, obviously, when we did, it worked. And we'll see this year. We'll see because, look, we all know they're going to try it again. They will try this again, this fast-paced, up-tempo offense, and we'll see. But we'll see because, like you said, there's no more – excuses. He's in the offense year 3. They got rid of guys like Landry, so they don't have to force feed him the ball. So he's out there whining to complain if he's not getting the ball, which there were some reports that who knows how much are true. But what else here? And also, the one thing I want to touch on that you also said was that they're sort of locked into him till 2020, which I agree. Most likely they are. But if this upcoming year is bad, then I don't know how much you're locked in them, only in the fact that this offseason, beyond a shadow of a doubt, and this sort of became finalized at the draft, that Chris Greer, Mike Tannenbaum, and head coach Adam Gase, they have hitched their wagon 100% to Ryan Tannehill. And if this year ends up bad, and by bad, look, we know what bad means. They go 3-13, 5-11 type bad. Those guys are out of a job. They cannot survive this because they just can't. Because everyone is going to point to them and say, and when I say everyone, that means the owner. Why did we not try to move up in round one for the quarterback? Why didn't we do something else at quarterback? This Tannehill thing you guys said was going to work, and now for whatever reason it didn't. They're going to be out of a job. So whoever takes their spots might not want even him around and will just take the hit, take the cap hit. So that's something else that's in play here. I know financially it makes no sense to move on from him after this year, but if there's a new GM, head coach and stuff in place, I don't care what he's making. As we saw last year with Sue and stuff, I don't care what he's making. He's going to be gone because no new regime is going to let him sink them too. Because I know that's more of a long-term thing to worry about, but just something I want to bring up because financially it won't make sense. But if this year goes really bad, which we know is always possible, being a fan of the Dolphins, I think it'll be a total house cleaning, and that will include Tannehill as well. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that. I think what will cause Stephen Ross to say, all right, we're going to pull the plug on this experiment, we're going to move on, is, as you said, the record's got to be pretty atrocious. I think if, because they've got the guys in place now, Adam Gase has his players in place on this football team, if the team goes 9-7,
I think they keep everyone around.
I think they keep everyone around. A winning record keeps everybody in-house, and then you get another year with Adam Gase pretty much calling the shots on the roster. Anything less than that, they're done. If they make the playoffs, everything is forgiven.
That's right.
For this year, and everybody gets to really keep their job. It's very difficult to tell where this team is going to be heading and in what direction. Everybody believes that the Dolphins are going to have 2 wins, 2-14. I've seen on some of these websites, Vegas has them at over under for 5 wins.
Yeah. Just crazy low.
It's crazy low. And I think the Dolphins have enough talent, and I think they have the coach that can get these guys going in the right direction. But this team cannot start slow. That has always been their issue. I mean, how many times last year did they have a lead at halftime? I don't remember any.
Not many.
There were not many times that they were ahead. So this team has to start fast, not only in just in games, but in record. They have to have, at the midway point of the season, you know, when you're at week 8-9, this team has to be 2 games above 500.
Yeah.
They have any sort of chance to get to the promised land.
Yeah.
You have to have that kind of winning record.
Yeah. Because if they start off slow, you know, the negativity from last year is going to creep up again and start to snowball. And you're going to hear all the media, whether it's local or national, say, you guys said it was the culture. You ran off Sue, you ran off Landry, and you still stink. You guys don't know what you're doing. And you know what? They'd be 100% right in saying that. That would be fair criticism. That's why now when I see the national media, which we've all seen it the past however many weeks and months, rip the Miami Dolphins up one side and right down the other, saying they're one of the worst teams in the league. I don't know what they're doing. They're clueless. To some extent, you have to ignore it because those guys are just looking at it from a surface view. No Sue, no Landry, no Mike Pouncey. They must stink. So I get that. They're not going to dig deep into every NFL team and give you stuff that's really in-depth. So you can't take that stuff too seriously. The one thing I will say,
I want to jump in real quick on what
you
just said. Yeah. You can have the narrative that you got rid of your best 3 football players on the team. I wouldn't say Pouncey was in there,
Pouncey's
but
not one of the
a
best
lot of people believe.
I understand what you're saying.
People believe that Pouncey was one of the guys. I think about it like this. 2 out of the last 3 years, the Dolphins were 6-10, right?
Those guys didn't help us one bit, yeah.
they didn't help us at all. Sticks and 10, if they were elite players and made such a huge difference, how come this team hasn't been in the playoffs for three straight years?
Exactly.
They are good football. They are very good football players, but they did not make the impact that is required to get to the next level. So for everybody who thinks that the Dolphins are throwing away great talent and things like that, I agree. I did not like the fact that Landry is gone. I was always on board with the Dolphins trying to keep Jarvis Landry. It didn't work out that way. But Sue's contract, he never lived up to it. He never, ever changed this defense. The defense ranked in the 20s every single year Sue was in Miami for 3 years. The best year that they had was the start of the 2016 season. Or, I'm sorry, last year the defense was top-notch. I apologize. Yeah. It wasn't 16. It was last year. The defense was top five for the first four games of the season, the first quarter of the season, first five games of the season. And then they just completely tanked down into the 20s.
Yep.
So did he make that much of an impact? Absolutely not. Did he have help behind him? No, the linebackers are awful. So if everything gets addressed and you have more depth and you added players with Landry, you added Danny Amendola and Albert Wilson. So can you get production of 100 catches out of those two guys?
Probably.
The answer, I think, is yes.
Yeah,
I think the answer is yes. But for people to say the narrative is that this team is not going to be good because they got rid of the best players, have no idea what they're looking at. They're looking at the players that have left, and that's it.
That's it. And they're not doing they're not like us, or they're not like the other fan sites or even the local media out there who follow this stuff day to day and know the ins and outs. And we can name the third string center and why that's a smart thing to have this year because we've seen the year past the center. They don't see that. The one thing I will say in their defense, and I'll say this in the defense, and it's a true fact, is that Miami over the past however many years, they haven't won much, if at all. You have a quarterback who, like you said, good, maybe a little bit more than good. That's about it. There's no reason to have faith in them. So when they rip the Miami Dolphins, maybe they go overboard or maybe they're too extreme in their analysis that they're the worst team in the league and they only are going to win, three games next year. That might be a bit extreme, but what they have nothing positive to say because what positive has been in Miami, the past 5 or 6 years? Okay, we had a 1-8-game stretch where they were great. Aside from that, that's not much to hang your hat on. I hate to break it to people. That's really not much to hang your hat on. There's been nothing else positive out of Miami in the NFL. So I sort of get where the national media says this stuff, because if they say something positive, it's like off of what? 1-8-game stretch, 1 year? It's like that's – so, look, like I said, you can't take it too seriously. It's just people who don't follow the team every day, and they're just voicing an opinion from a very far – distance. But on the other hand, what do you want them to say positive? There's nothing to hang your hat on. There's really not. I mean, they always lose Miami, and they have a quarterback who he's been in the league since 2012, and yes, he's good, but he's not that good. You know what I mean? He's really not. So it's like, I get it. And what was else? Oh, two other things you mentioned I want to touch on real quick. Number one, thank God for the Supreme Court. I want to say that because now that we can bet now in any state, hopefully that will be all done in time here for September and the football season. I am more than ready to place down a large sum of money that Miami will win more than 5.5 games, which means they pretty much have to win 6. I don't think they're going to win a ton of games, but I think they'll hit either 6 or 7 wins this year. So thank God for the Supreme Court. I want to say that right up front because I love the fact that now I don't. I can probably place that bet here in my state legally. And so that one I'm happy for. And last thing I'll say is back on Chris Greer. I've seen some people in the media and fans are starting to look at the past few drafts he's run. And you know what? On paper, they look, they're pretty good right now. They're very good, actually, on paper. And I think a lot of fans have high hopes for this year's draft with Fitzpatrick, Gesicki, and Jerome Baker and such. I will say this, though. As a GM, you're graded primarily on the quarterback spot, and you cannot mess that up. So he can hit all the home runs he wants at left tackle, at running back, at tight end, linebacker. He can hit all the home runs he wants. If you screw up the quarterback spot, it's almost like your death nail. You cannot screw that up. So he's all in, too, on Ryan Tannehill this year, because if this blows up and goes really bad, he's responsible for it just as much as everybody else. And all the other draft picks he's made won't be able to save him, no matter how good they are and no matter how many of them there are. He's all in on this too. He's all in. So pretty much that's all I got right now on Tannehill. I feel like we haven't talked about him much at all since he got hurt, which is December 2016, because there's been no reason to talk about him. Now, before the draft, we talked about him a little bit, obviously, because there was the talk and rumors, will they take someone here in round one and possibly start to move on from him? Clearly, they did not. So we're going to be talking more about Ryan Tannehill here. Look, I can't do it every day. I know some people love to talk about him every day, but there does come a point where it's overkill. And look, he's been here since 2012. We know who he is. I don't need to see film on him every day. I don't need to read stat sheets and graphs. We know who he is. And until he shows us otherwise, he's that guy. And it's sort of, like I said, 2018. Put up or shut up, now or never. No more excuses. It's all over. He will either play well this year or he won't. But we're going to be talking about him more as we get closer to the season. Now we're starting to inch up here with OTAs and starting to head into that training camp season here in a few months. But we'll be talking about him more, but I can't do it every day. It's too much. Because, like you said, so many people either love him or hate him. It just becomes an endless debate. It's like the should Pete Rose be in the Hall of Fame debate. I could sit here and talk about Tannehill every day, but it just becomes overkill. Just like people on the radio can sit there and talk about
Yanni and Laurel.
Yanni and Laurel. Pete Rose in the Hall of Fame. What color is the dress? Ryan Tannehill is that in the world of the Miami Dolphins. You could literally talk about it every day, but there does come a point where it just becomes so boring. Because it's like, it's just over analysis and nitpicking. Look, win games, lead him to the playoffs, and if not, you know, he's been here since 2012, time to move on, period. That's how I see it, and I'm sure we will have this talk probably not every day, but once or twice more in the offseason, because something will happen in news of Ryan Tannehill, and it's going to cause a stir, and we'll have to talk about him some more. So let's transition off there and get to the other topic I want to talk about, which is more about the NFL. And the changes that they are going to vote on next week, it looks like, regarding the kickoffs. And let me start with this. Usually when the NFL has these rule changes to improve player safety, I'm on board with it. Look, these guys are out there risking their lives. Make the game as safe as possible. I got no problem with it. You know, some of the rules are a little out there, a little crazy. But for the most part, there's nothing drastic going on. So I'm fine with it, and I can live with it. This one, I think, is the dumbest possible rule change they've ever made. And if they vote on this as is, without making any changes to what's been proposed, I think they've lost their damn minds. And I think this league is quickly about to go downhill real fast. For those of you who don't know, let me just give you a brief rundown of the rule changes. Number one, the first, you must have five players on each side of the kickoff, which would sort of hamper the onside kicks because in the previous rule, you could go, I think it was, you only had to have four on each side, which means you could load up one side with at least six guys at least, which gives you somewhat of an edge. Now it's just five and five. Five on each side and your kicker. So that's number one. Number two, you can't have a running start. So pretty much when the place kicker is heading up there to have the kickoff, nobody around him can run. They have to stand still like a bunch of mannequins. Okay, again, not a huge issue with that. Where it gets crazy is where it gets crazy. So the NFL is proposing the kickoff team won't be able to line up more than 1 yard from the restraining line, which is the line you can't cross. So if they place the ball at the 35-yard line, they got to be at the 34. So there's no running start. You're standing still at the 34-yard line. They can't be 5 yards behind it for a running start. Two players must be lined up outside the yard marker on the field, and two players between the inbound lines that spread, which essentially that's a fancy way of saying is we're going to put everyone in the middle of the field. So there's not going to be this wild kamikaze. Everyone's heading downfield from all angles. You're going to know where everybody's running from. Okay. Then it gets even crazier. On the return team, at least 8 players must be in the 15-yard setup zone. So essentially, from the 35-yard line where the kickoff's taking place to the 40-yard line of the return team, so on the opposite side of the 50, you got to have 8 of your return guys. And for the first, let me get this straight. Okay, and here's where it gets weird. Until the ball is touched or the ball hits the ground, no player on the return team can block anybody. So essentially, the team who is kicking the ball off is going to put their fastest guys on special team. And hopefully, as soon as that ball is kicked from a standstill spot, just like a track meet, they are going to run as fast as they can to get past the blockers because those guys can't touch them. They can't block them. They can't put a hand on them. So they're going to hopefully run as fast as they can past them to get beyond them by the time the ball hits the ground or caught. Now, there's so many flaws in this, it's not even funny. And it means pretty much you're going to see every guy, they won't aim to kick the ball out of the end zone anymore because you're going to want to kick it short of the end zone to like the 1 or 2 yard line or 5 yard line. Hope your guys can run past those guys without being touched and then just light up the return guy. If they think this is going to help the safety of the players, talk to someone who's sitting back there by himself who has to return this kick because they're going to be lit up. Tom, what are some of your thoughts on this?
To quote Billy Madison, everyone in this room is now dumber having to hear that.
Yep, it's
true. I award you no point and may have God have mercy on your soul.
Exactly.
Now, my big thought on this is they cannot allow somebody to sit back there to take a kickoff and not have anyone protect him. It is the stupidest idea because what it looks like to me is the setup zone is between the 40 and 50 yard line on the receiving team side. The 40 and 50 yard line.
You
cannot block somebody until they cross the 50 yard line. So if I'm the return team, you set everybody up that way, but as soon as that ball crosses and I'm starting to run back as soon as the ball's kicked off. I'm running backwards. So once the team that is coming down the field, the kickoff team is coming down the field to make a play, I would have all my guys set up at the 40-yard line, run back 10 yards, and get ready. You know,
here's the thing. Here's the thing, though. You can't have a wedge block anymore at all. So you take that out of the equation as well. Not even the two-man wedge block, which they reduced a few years ago from saying 10 to pass, you'd have wedge blocks of 3, 4, 5 guys, whatever. They go, now it can only be a two-man wedge block. Now there's no wedge blocks. So even if you're sending guys back, it's like they can't even team up to block somebody. You're on your own. So they have pretty much set up the return guy to get lit up and fail. Because how it works is you got to have 8 guys at pretty much at the line inside that zone area. And then one will be your returner. So that's 9. You can only have 2 other guys back there, but they can't form a wedge block. So they're going to be split out there in no man's land. I don't know what you want them to do. They're just going to be standing there. If you can't perform a wedge block, what's the point even having them back? It's going to be a disaster on every level. The last rule I just want to mention real quick that I didn't bring up. If the ball touches the ground in the end zone now, the play's over. So you can't even let the ball bounce and then just sort of pick it up and run. Oh, no, no, no. If the ball hits the ground, the play's over. Whistle blows. So it's the whole thing is beyond ridiculous.
If it's in the end zone, that's exactly what they do in college. The ball crosses the end zone. Receiver doesn't touch it. It's a touchback. The ball goes out of the end zone. It's a touchback. Now there's just you don't have to have a kneel down. If you got a guy,
let it go.
If the ball's kicked off going through the back of the end zone, as soon as it touches, you just walk. Yeah. Just go to the sideline, which I'm okay with. I'm fine with that rule. Because there's no need to really have these guys, pursuing.
True, but when you got a guy back there,
Tucker, who's going to bomb it through the back of the end zone.
Yeah, but if you get it, true, which I'm fine with that. Look, out of all these rule changes, that one is probably the least one I have, least one I have a problem with. But, if you're a guy back there and say it's, really, and say hits a day with a ton of sun, and he's out there. Oh, I lost the ball. Hits the ground. He wants to return it, but once it hits the ground, he can't. To me, look, this ain't college. These guys are paid professionals. I mean, I don't know. It's just one more thing on top of the rest of these rule changes. You've pretty much taken away the onside kick, which again, I don't have a huge problem with that because it is a play that's very dangerous. I get it. But you've sort of taken that away because the odds are not now in anybody's favor. Because you have to have five guys on each side of the ball. I think you'll see any onside kicks are going to be the ones that are sort of squibs up the middle because it makes no sense to sort of aim right or aim left. Like I said, whatever. To remove the two-man wedge block, I think is a bit dumb. I mean, it's just a two-man wedge block for crying out loud. That one's a bit overkill. But the whole setup zone, not being able to touch someone until the ball's touched or hits that one is going to cause, that one's going to be a nightmare. I don't know. Because right now, just for example, if I'm the Miami Dolphins, on special teams this year, I want to see Minkah Fitzpatrick, Jakeem Grant, I want to see Kenny Stills, and I want to see, and I also want to see Drake. Because I need guys who got extreme speed, who can run down the field without being touched or blocked to blow up a kickoff. And I know those guys are, and they're very important players at either wide receiver, at running back and stuff. I don't care, though. I need them on special teams because this rule change is big. And you got to have your fastest guys out there because if they can't touch you or block you, hello, get the speed guys out there. Let's go. Time to run, right?
Yep. I'm not opposed to the five players on each side thing. That's minor. The guys that are, on the kickoff team, you can't line up at the 30-yard line. They have a 5-yard head start and get full steam ahead. Okay, cool. You're going to take away a lot of those hard hits in the middle of the field as the ball is in the air still and nobody's even touched the football yet. Okay, cool. That's fine. That's why they have that 15-yard rule, the setup zone, which is still stupid. But not having a 5-yard head start, okay, I get it. But think about it. Guys run 40-yard dashes in 4.3 seconds.
And so they got to run that far.
15 yards. No, 15 yards will take these guys a second and a half to get to where they got to get.
And then they're both free just to tee off on the goddamn returner. On that returner. Because they're not going to kick the ball in the end zone. Why would you? You want to kick it right to the goal line or the 5-yard line, somewhere in that range, and make him run it out because he's going to have no blockers in front of him except for those two guys back there who can't form a wedge, and you want to get as many guys past that, those first 8 guys who can't touch you, you want to get them past there, and let's have the numbers in our favor and blow up the returner. I think this has disaster written all over it. They're supposed to vote on this next week. We'll see. I think it will pass, honestly. Hopefully they make some changes to it. Hopefully they make a couple tweaks because the whole setup zone, can't touch a guy. I think that's a recipe for disaster. I almost hope they try it out first in the preseason for a year and then implement it full-time in 2019. That would be smart because that's what they did with the extra
just
point.
Like they did.
Yep. That would be smart. And I'd have no problem with that because in the preseason, you play, you know, everybody on special teams, guys who aren't going to make the team. So if somebody is going to get hurt and blown up, let's see it like with them, and not see it with like a star player, which I know sounds like mean, but it's true. Try it out in the preseason for a year and let's see what happens, and then implement it in 2019 if all goes well. Hopefully that's what they do. But from the sounds of it, they are full steam ahead on this, and they want this for next year.
Oh, heaven help us. And part of me, Mike, thinks this is Bill Belichick's doing. So it helps the Patriots.
I'm sure he's already got the loophole. I'm sure he's got like another loophole that nobody's thought of yet.
Yep. So this is another Patriot rule. So we'll see the Patriots still returning kicks for touchdowns or recovering kicks at the 5-yard line.
Exactly.
Something ridiculous.
And look, if this is just one more step towards removing that play altogether from the game, then just remove the kickoff now. Let's not do it in these little steps, baby steps. Let's just rip the Band-Aid off and have no more kickoffs, because that's what the end goal seems to be here, is they want to remove that play from the game for player safety issues, which, again, if that's the end goal, fine. But just rip the Band-Aid off and remove it now, because implementations like this where we sort of inch towards that year after year with the rule changes, why? Let's just remove the play from the game. I think it would stink, but you know what? That's obviously the end goal, because that's clearly what they want at this point. They don't want any returns, which I think there's a flaw in this rule where I think you'll see even more returns, because why kick the ball out of the end zone? It makes no sense. But it's like that seems to be the end goal. Just remove the play from the game. So let's just remove it from the game. Remove it from the game. After every score, the team then starts from the 25-yard line. Nope. And there's no more returns, no more kickoffs. And maybe once a game, if you want to try an onside kick, save it for when you really might need it, and you can try your one onside kick a game and call it a day, because I think that's where this game is headed. I think that's where the league wants to be, but they just don't want to sort of throw that out of the fans all at once. They sort of want to prepare the fans, take it slow, and not just change the game overnight. But that's where this is going. It's just a matter of when, not if.
Yep.
So, Tom. Yeah, unfortunately. So, Tom, thanks so much for joining me on the podcast today, and as always, we'll have you on many more times, as you are one of the legacy people here at DolphinsTalk.com at this point, one of the OGs, one of the originals. So you will always be on whenever you want. And you'll be doing some shows here soon in the off season as well, so I don't have to do one every day. You'll all be hearing more of Tom in the near future. And we'll be back right after this break.
DolphinsTalk.com is your one-stop source for anything and everything Miami Dolphins. From the award-winning DolphinsTalk.com podcast to original commentary, breaking news, and interviews with current and former players, as well as media types, DolphinsTalk.com keeps you up to date and informed with all the latest happenings taking place in the world of the Miami Dolphins. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Dolphins Talk and to check us out at DolphinsTalk.com every day for all your Miami Dolphins needs.
Okay, we're back. And once again, I would like to thank Tom Ferguson for joining me tonight on the podcast. Tom's always a great guest to have on, and we will hear from him many times in the future, as always. We'll have another show out possibly this weekend. If not, then on Monday for sure. And next week does start the Miami Dolphins OTAs, the first OTAs of the spring. So we'll have a bunch of shows next week, and I am working on having a big guest next week. Don't want to say who and jinx it, but there's a possibility we'll have a big name guest on the podcast next week. Someone we haven't had on the podcast before, and someone I know for certain you will all love hearing from. So be on the lookout for that. So probably next show will probably be Monday, but there's a chance for a weekend show, all depending on if anything happens in the world of the Miami Dolphins. As always, be sure to visit the website, DolphinsTalk.com. We always have a bunch of new content up on the website. Also, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. I don't say that enough. For those of you who are new to this podcast, and we are always getting new listeners pretty much with each and every show, as the scope of this podcast has grown tremendously over the first 4 or 5 months of this year, as we've already surpassed 500,000 listens and downloads. Everyone Be sure to subscribe to this podcast if you haven't already, whether you listen on SoundCloud, iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher, you know all the places. Wherever you listen to it, be sure to subscribe. So when a new show drops, it goes directly to your smart device and you can just listen. And also, be sure to follow me on Twitter at Dolphins Talk, at Dolphins Talk. And if for those of you who are not on Twitter, which I know many of you who listen to this podcast are not on Twitter, send me an email at and the email address is dolphinstalk1977@gmail.com. My email, look, I am so thankful for all of you who take a few minutes to send me an email, whether it's with a kind word about the podcast or with a question or comment or something. I mean, my email box has flooded probably the past, I would say, 6 to 8 weeks. So I know a lot of you who listen to this show are not on either Twitter or Facebook, and that's always one way you can contact me via email at, and the email address is dolphinstalk1977@gmail.com. We do have a Facebook page, but I will admit I don't update it regularly, which that will change in the coming weeks and months. So be sure to follow us on Facebook. I will probably put a link to the Facebook page up on our website. It's not something, you know, really the site is the main site here at dolphinstalk.com, and that's the site that you want to go to for everything. But we do have a Facebook page, which I'm going to try to get more interactive with in the coming weeks and months. So if you want to like that page and follow us on that page, I'll put a link up to that on the website, dolphinstalk.com. As always, be sure to follow and support the other websites that re-air this podcast. They are finfanatic.com, finfever.com, thegruelingtruth.net, and dolphin-uk.com, as well as the Facebook pages, Fanatics, the Miami Dolphins End Zone, and Doll Fanatics. So, everyone, have a great Friday, and we'll talk to you again after a while.
Thank you for listening to the DolphinsTalk.com podcast. Be sure to visit DolphinsTalk.com every day for all of your latest Miami Dolphins news.